You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and it is Tuesday. And a lot likely that you, if you're listening to me live, yes, it is Tuesday. But it is a couple of days after another Arizona Cardinals battle against the Philadelphia Eagles, only this time it is not after their fifth straight victory. It is after a 24-21 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, dropping them to 7-5 and also dropping them to 8th in the NFC playoff race. And tonight, well, thank you, of course, for listening. Thank you, of course, for listening. If you're listening to us live, if you have a, if you'd like to call in and give us your take, ask us some questions, comment, do something. You can call in at 646-478-3787. Again, that's 646-478-3787. If you are listening via download, thank you. And if you haven't yet, please go ahead and subscribe to our feed on iTunes or through Stitcher Radio. Or you can always find us at blogtalkradio.com/Revenge of the Birds. So it's been a while since we have had to talk about an Arizona Cardinals loss. It's been a good run so far. But if you'll notice, and once Seth gets on the line, he's going to join us in a few minutes. And we'll talk about, well, we're going to talk about the game that happened, the Eagles game. Kind of the issues that happened. We're going to talk about, where's the blame lay? Where can we put the blame? After there were bad calls, it was kind of like the first half Arizona Cardinals we saw had some of the same issues that they had before. We're going to look at, well, what exactly went wrong? Why did they lose? We're going to talk about things that stood out. And we're going to talk about the playoffs. Yes, playoffs, huge Jim Morris. Playoffs? Don't talk about the playoffs. I'm trying to win a game. But we can talk about the playoffs. We're the fans. I'm a talking head. We write about the Cardinals. We talk about the Cardinals. If you haven't already been to our site, Revenge of the Birds, please do so. It's our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals team site where we keep, and I kind of run the site, so... Yeah, it's shameless plug, and it's where you want for if you want to find a great community of Arizona Cardinals fans. We've got fans from all over. In fact, there are a lot of fans that are all over the country, more than you might expect. It's a great place. We do have media access. I am a credentialed media member. I do get to, I do cover the Cardinals at as many practices as I am able to. I cover their home games. I cover most of training camp. And so, well, Arizona Cardinals, they lose. They're now 7-5. The San Francisco 49ers, they won. They are 8-4. And the Panthers won, 9-3. And, well, Arizona Cardinals sit at number 8. They are now behind. They're now behind the 49ers. Ed, who have the sixth spot right now in the playoffs, and as well now the Philadelphia Eagles, who hold the seventh seed and the tiebreak, even though at 7-5 they have the same record as the Cardinals via their head-to-head victory. And joining us on the show, as we always have him on Tuesday evening, is Seth Cox. Seth, how are you doing tonight? Thanks for coming on again.
Oh, I'm good, Jess. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Of course, it is not as good as it could have been. We could be talking about Honestly, in my opinion, we should be talking about an Arizona Cardinals win, except that they came out and laid an egg early and then got jobbed by some calls late. And so they weren't able to do the thing that they need to be able to do, and the Bruce Arians talked about in the post-game press conference after their win over the Colts, is that if they're going to be in the thing, if they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to be on the road. They have to know how to learn how to win on the road. And so as we talk about the game, let's talk about let's talk about first about what stood out most on the negative side. At least there's plenty to pick on. There's plenty to pick on. We had kind of the same issues that we ran into early in the season. They weren't covering the tight ends very well. They gave up pressure. There were turnovers. There were silly penalties. What stood out, Seth? What stood out to you the most on the negative side of things is what was just, geez, what went wrong?
I think to start with, for me, one of the biggest negatives that I had was the game plan, so to speak. You and I have talked about in previous weeks how they've kind of cut down on their deep ball, throwing the deep ball, and now all of a sudden, you know, Arians kind of got back to, all right, let's, you know, throw the ball down the field and see what we can do. And, you know, I wrote about it in, I think it was June or July, that as much as ballyhooed as Carson Palmer's arm was, it was really overwrought with that was just kind of an incorrect thing. He's been terrible the last couple of years throwing the ball deep, 20 plus yards down the field. Of course, today ESPN Stats and Info came out with, you know, kind of that evidence that he's been really bad. And it, you know, it's just frustrating because I thought they've done a better job lately of, you know, kind of containing how much they're going down the field and, you know, using that short and intermediate stuff to maybe open up the passing game. And even his completions, his two completions, I don't think either of them were receivers that were open. They were both receivers that were well covered, you know, and Michael Floyd made a spectacular play. And I can't even remember who the other catch was, to be honest with you right now. And that was kind of my thing is, you know, you had a running game that was really effective. You had a short passing game that was really effective, and yet you kept trying to force the ball down the field. And I had a question for you, Jess, and I was searching for it on the site today, and I couldn't remember. I thought you and I had talked about it before, but was there an article written or something to the effect that Arians doesn't like his quarterbacks to audible out of plays and that he likes his quarterbacks to run the plays that are called, or did I just make that up in my head?
That is something – I don't think we had it on the site. It was a passing comment or I would think it was a comment on a site. I never heard the quote myself. I don't recall ever running across it or hearing it at a press conference. But that does, to me, ring true. The type of play caller that Bruce Arians is he likes to call the play, and that's the way he wants it run. He does not give his quarterback, from what I understand – that Carson Palmer does not have broad latitude to change things at the line of scrimmage. But I don't have that written anywhere, and I couldn't give you a specific quote to cite that. But I have heard the same thing as you did.
Okay, and yeah, that's what I thought. And so that's what I was curious about, because I asked the question kind of during the game after Palmer's second interception is, you know, is this Palmer's refusal to check down, or was this more of, you know, this is, hey, you know, I'm the play caller, you know, you're the quarterback, just do what I say type of thing. And we're kind of seeing the fruition of that. You know, it's that was my most frustrating thing. I thought Arians, you know, the last two games has really gotten back to being Bruce Arians. Hey, I love to throw the ball down the field. I love to, you know, kind of bypass the running game. And they did run the ball 23 times, I think it was. One was Carson Palmer, so not count that 22 times. And 18 of them were, you know, a decent job by Mr. Mendenhall. And, you know, I just, I was confused why it wasn't used more, I guess.
Well, I think going into that game, I can almost imagine what they're thinking. Philadelphia's weakness is the secondary. And I believe that they felt that they could exploit that. And so that's why they did so more than they had in previous weeks, is take those shots down the field. And of course, when you ended up getting down the way they did, it made it easier. Ken Whisenhunt, we saw it a lot. Oh, crud, we're down. But though they did stay, at least early in the game, they were doing a really good job of running the ball. And I know that was kind of the game plan. It was to soften things up with these big jumbo packages to create more plays down the field off play action. That was actually one of the things I'll talk about in a minute, is I was actually really pleased about, is to see how well the running game actually did. Ran across the stat, I think, I'll have to credit, I think Sean ran across it, Sean Church, said that there was not a single negative play in the running game. But for me, kind of everything came to a head is the type of things that were the issues early this season. Everything they did poorly early in the season came back. So with all the progress that they made, it just kind of like out the door. They had the early turnovers. And so while Palmer, if we look back at the numbers a couple of years ago, John Skelton had almost the exact same stat line as Carson Palmer did. It was like the first time an Arizona Cardinals quarterback since Kurt Warner, other than Kurt Warner, had thrown for 300 yards and three touchdowns. And Palmer at the end had a decent stat line, but those turnovers early were crippling as they fell behind, and it kind of the turnovers were the biggest thing. I mean, they'd done a good job of taking care of the ball. Palmer wasn't making bad throws. I mean, those were the right reads, but instead of underthrowing Floyd, he could have had a touchdown. And then so then they turned that into points. The Philadelphia turns that into points. And so it just kind of turned things around. I didn't like the fact that the pressure. I mean, we'd seen the past couple of weeks while the offensive line was still giving up some sacks. I mean, 2-3 sacks a game, which yeah, some would say is not good. But you notice that Palmer wasn't throwing under duress. It was, you could tell he was comfortable, and he didn't get that time against Philadelphia. He was under pressure a lot. He was affecting the way he was throwing and causing those inaccuracies. And while his interceptions came when he had a clean pocket, it affected the way he played the rest of the game. The other thing, it was like, goodness, how many times can we talk about this? Can we not defend a single tight end? Is it impossible? Is there really nothing we can do? Because it almost seems like literally there isn't a single thing we can do. Tight ends are just going to kill us. They've done well for a little bit, and then all of a sudden they gave up, what was it, 9 catches for 80, 90 yards and 3 touchdowns. You give up a touchdown, okay, that happens. I mean, they used LaRod Stevens-Howling last year on the goal line in week 1, and he scored a touchdown. I mean, you could get touchdown, but when you get 3 times and every single time it's a tight end, it's just that those matchups continue to cause problems. And I guess maybe that's what they're saying. Hey, if they beat us with the tight end, they beat us with the tight end. And I don't know. That just continues to be a problem. And in Philadelphia, they do have talent at the tight end position. They have a grizzled veteran in Brent Celek who's had himself a good career. And then with Zach Ertz, I mean, he's a young, talented player. But it seems like it doesn't matter who you put up against the Cardinals, if he's at any mismatch at all, it will be a big mismatch. And that continues to just drive me insane.
Well, and as you said, I don't really understand. You know, you and I have kind of had the conversation before, and Darrell Washington is not the best cover guy. I know. The tight end problem per se hasn't been as bad since he's come back, but I think that's also a mixture of playing some bad teams and the defense kind of rolling at this point. And now I think, you know, as you said, you played probably the best passing team you'll see until the last 2 games. And you know, they kind of did a number. And that's not to take anything away from Matt Ryan and Tony Gonzalez, but I think this year we've seen that they're, you know, kind of on the down slope. At least Gonzalez is, obviously, age-wise, but, you know, Ryan has really struggled this year, and that offense is kind of bad. And so, you know, it was just, as you said, it was kind of back to week one type stuff, and that's what's frustrating, because you're in a playoff chase, and that's how you come out and play. You know, they finished well. You don't want to, you know, and so that's, you know, that's important, and they came back and they made a game of it when really the way they played in the first, you know, two quarters plus the first drive of the third quarter, they really had no business being in the game. But, you know, they stood up, they tried to mount a comeback, and just some things went against them, and they ended up losing.
And that's really, and going to that now is, as now we look at the game, there were definitely, in fact, listeners, if you haven't run across it yet, there was one of the writers for the new site, MMQB.com, the Monday Morning Quarterback, Peter King's site, and one of his writers went through and actually screenshotted, frame by frame, comparing some of the reasons why the Arizona Cardinals fans have reason to gripe. Now I'll be the first to tell you, it's Bruce Arians was very clear about after the game that the refs did not lose the game. But I don't think there's anyone who can say that they didn't impact things or they didn't cause issues with the game. They became part of the narrative there rather than they just made calls. They became part of the narrative of the story. They became part of the story, which you don't want to see, and which is increasingly happening week by week in the NFL. And so while the Cardinals botched things up enough times with the interceptions, the sacks, they were unable to overcome. And when they even still had a chance, is that some bad or questionable to bad calls affected things. The Cardinals did submit game tape to the league to have, about 15 plays to be reviewed. And so officiating had an issue, but I want to talk about if we had to lay blame, if we had to say, okay, we're going to assign blame up for this game, how much of it would you lay on the referees? How much of it would you lay on Carson Palmer alone in his play? How much of it would be on the defensive scheming? How much on the individual players and the defense? How much on the offensive line? I gave you a couple days to think about that stuff. Where would you place blame if you had to? If you had 100% or a full piece of pie to give a blame pie, where would you give that the pieces?
You know, in the end, for me, the refs are just a part of the game, and it's, for me, it's more about the fact that, you know, we can blame the refs for, you know, the ticky-tack calls. They were correct calls, as Greg Bedard pointed out, but they were very, you know, at that point of the game, why are you making that call? And then on the flip side, you had missed calls, you know, on the Cardinals. But to me, the glaring thing was more Carson Palmer missed Andre Roberts on a easy, you know, throw. I think it was a 5 yards, you know, 10 yard out, and he just completely missed. I mean, it wasn't even a close throw. It looked like something John Skelton would throw, and that's where I was like, what is going on? And, you know, to me, that's what really irritated me. I think the blame, you know, you could put 10% on the refs and just say they messed up. You know, they missed some things. But, and you know, they're going to always miss. We've seen this all year long in different games. I mean, we saw it in the Washington game. We saw it. Hell, the game, I think it was right after our game that came on Fox, they had a crazy you know, that Bears-Vikings game where they called the Vikings player for a face mask and nobody could figure out where on earth the face mask was. And, you know, it just that I think that's kind of how it is. I think you need to do enough to not have the refs and their ineptness come back to bite you. And you know, while you can certainly lay blame, it's more of, you know, you have to do your part, and I think that was more of it to me.
And I personally would give, you know, I would up the blame a little bit. Not necessarily the reason why they lost the game, but the Cardinals had opportunities taken away from them. I think for me, not necessarily the mugging down the field that Michael Floyd, I mean, should have been, and that's happened all year. I'll give you this. For some reason, this year, we have seen, with the Arizona Cardinals at least, I'm not watching all the games all the time, at least there seems to be two or three plays every single game where the team, the receiver, the quarterback, the coaching staff is expecting a flag to be thrown because there's a lot of grabbing down the field that the receivers are getting held up and they're not getting flags, only to see Tyrann Mathieu get called for that holding play. Oh, it's very frustrating. I'd put lay 20% of this, why the Cardinals lost, on the referees. It's a minimal 20%, but because they had those opportunities taken away, particularly when you had Patrick Peterson and you had a turnover right there, and they call a foul, a ticky-tack foul away from the play. And to take that away from the Cardinals and from Peterson, who made a great play. And honestly, Peterson had a really good game. And I was disappointed. There was a play down in the first half where I thought he should have come down on a deep throw to DeSean Jackson. He should have come down with the interception he just didn't come up with. But he should have had a second interception that game, too. That just didn't happen. So I'd put 20% on the referees. I lay 30%. I think those were pretty round numbers, you know. The ball's a pretty simple game, at least with that. We're going to do some big rounds. 20% on the rest. I'm going to give 30% to the defensive scheming. The defense did – there were some good things the defense did. They got pressure on Nick Foles. They didn't do it enough, but they got 5 sacks. But the fact that, again, 30% on the fact that, oh, goodness, what the heck are we going to do with tight ends? It's like, are we just going to assume that every team's going to come out and run 4 wide sets? I don't know, I guess. But they're going to run receivers. Or that's just their game plan to say – if you're going to beat us with the tight end, I guess you're going to beat us with the tight end. We're going to take away your best players. We're going to take away DeSean Jackson. We're going to limit LeSean McCoy. If you beat us with Zach Ertz and Brent Celek, I guess that's the poison they're picking. So I'm going to lay 30% there, and then the rest, that 50% that's remaining, I'm going to lay – I can't do it on just Carson Palmer, but the offensive line and Carson Palmer work together kind of – you can't separate one from the other. So I'm going to lay 50% of the blame right there. The Eagles got too much pressure on Palmer. He was under. I mean, the fact that the first series and Bradley Salah gets beaten and they get the fumble, and then the next series that there's the interception, all of that is kind of rolled into one thing. The same issues that we've been talking about since 2010, offensive line and quarterback play, and Carson Palmer was able to make up for it. Cause, I mean, he is a talented player. He's a better quarterback than anything we've had since Warner. Not that that's saying much, but he's talented enough that he was able to overcome much of what happened. But he still does some things, like he's got to make those throws down the field. He's got to hit Roberts on that third down play when it's your last chance. When it's your last chance with the ball, you can't come up and get turnover on downs. You've got to run out of what you have to get down the field. You can't just run out of downs. You just can't do that and get a 3-and-out. It just doesn't work that way. So I put 50% on the offensive line and quarterback play, another 30% on the defensive scheme, and then I'm maybe going to go as high as 20% on the referees. Where do you put the rest of your blame graph?
I'd say 10, you know, if you want to stay around, you can say 10 on the refs, 20 on the defense, another 20 on the inability to cover tight ends and adjust to that. And then that leaves me with 50% on the offense, which I think is fair. And, you know, like I said, the offense, they did, they, you know, as the game went along, they did a little more. But I said it during the game, even that throw to Fitz where he scored the touchdown, that was that had, you know, hospital ball written all over it. That was just a I felt like that was a terrible throw. Maybe it's just me. But
Fitz's two biggest plays on the season were both, now the broadcast, they raved about Fitz's ability to keep his balance on that, when really what happened is that the second defensive player for Philadelphia took out the corner that was about to tackle him.
Yeah. Well, and lucky, I don't know, and maybe I'm missing one, but I was trying to remember back. I feel like Fitz has never, you know, knock on wood, obviously, but Fitz has never taken just a, you know, one of those massive blows over the middle. And I felt like that was the one he could have had. And for whatever reason, the safety just took a terrible angle and went to the backside instead of staying in front of him. And, you know, and like you said, he decided to tackle the corner instead of Fitz. And, but that was, you know, that was a bad throw. But in general, I thought the offense, you know, 50% falls on the offense, you know, between the quarterback, the coach, and the offensive line. I thought there was a lot of problems. You know, I thought Mendenhall, Fitzgerald, and Floyd did more than enough to win this game. Obviously, Roberts and Hausler, escape me for a second. Roberts and Hausler had some struggles in the game, but they, you know, it wasn't as much of them as it was the quarterback and the offensive line play.
Now, getting to that, since you brought up Fitzgerald, there was a little bit of debate. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter today with Sean and Michael Oliver and Ket Hodder, guys from our site, started talking about, okay, who you had to pick. If you had to pick one receiver to go with, would you go with Fitz or Floyd? And it was going back and forth. But you look at – talk about Fitzgerald this year. He's had two really big plays, two really big touchdowns, the one against San Francisco and then one against Philadelphia. And both of those big, long plays ended up kind of being fluky plays because, and again, in San Francisco, the guy missed the tackle, ended up, you know – I'll give credit to Fitz. Fitz did make the right – make a good move, just a little shake, just a little change of direction that threw things off, and that's a credit to his body control and the way he takes care of his body and that his balance is able to do that. And when the safety came and plowed into him and, well, into the corner, he was able to regain his balance after making just a little move and then have the sense of mind to get down the field and score. But both of those were – neither one of those plays, well, they were good plays, were defining Fitz moments by any means. It was more kind of a broken play. He happened to be – in the place when they did the broken play. While we've seen, at least this year, we've seen Michael Floyd. I mean, his 91-yarder was a thing of beauty. I mean, he makes the catch. He shakes off tacklers. And he's made some other – he gets separation from the defensive backs this year. He's reaching out, making great catches. He's coming back to the ball. And I've just been super, super impressed by – and I got killed by this. I got killed by this after the Indianapolis game. Just one of my quick observations, I think I did 10 observations after the game that I posted, and one of the ones I said is that Michael Floyd's the best receiver on this team right now. And not mean that to say that Fitz is necessary, but Floyd, and maybe it's because he's getting a little less attention, maybe. I can't imagine after teams that what have been seeing him do would not give him any attention, but he's making difference plays. He's doing impactful plays that make a difference. And I said he's the best receiver on the team right now. And people, hey, I got killed for it. Another guy on Twitter, Scott Howard, a guy that I follow, he kind of threw the same thing out there during the game. And while Fitz, he still gets the red zone targets, and he's very reliable there. He's just, in my opinion, this year we're seeing, and maybe it's the injuries, maybe it's the scheme, but Floyd's the guy that's kind of stepped up, and it's great. You got basically have two true number ones now, but I think Floyd is the better player right now.
I think you guys are right. I think Floyd's the better player. I think Fitzgerald's the better receiver still. Floyd, you know, Fitz has never been, you know, that physical run you over or run by you type guy. He's always been very crafty, and his route running has always been perfection, and that's why he's able to get open, because he's not a blazer and he's not a bully. And then obviously the hands, he's always had the best hands in the NFL. And I think that still all applies, but the fact is Floyd is younger and he's, you know, bigger and stronger and faster. And so he's just a better athlete than Larry is in the sense of explosiveness and things of that nature. Whereas Fitzgerald is still, you know, kind of the wily vet that knows how to get open, that knows, you know, the ins and outs of the game a little bit better. But I can't disagree that I think that Floyd's really taken his game to another level and done a good job of, you know, becoming the guy that you need him to be after being drafted 13th overall.
Well, it's shameful almost to see how it took so long for the offense to click, because now we're seeing kind of what Bruce Arians had talked about in the offseason, the type of numbers that if you look at across the board, if you had this kind of clicking, even with the rough time they had with the turnovers against Philadelphia, you have a team that the numbers between Floyd and Fitz and Hausler and Roberts, the potential what if they could be. Hausler, I don't remember if it was Palmer or Arians that said that he could be an 80-catch tight end. He could be. If the offense is clicking, if you notice, previous to the game against Philadelphia, what had happened? I mean, you saw Floyd and Hausler coming on strong, and I think it's by the nature of the offense is that if things are clicking, the numbers are just there. And we could have seen Fitz and Floyd, well, one of the two going for 1,400 yards, another going for 1,000 to 1,100, Fitz grabbing 90 to 100 balls. And if you look at, I mean, Floyd's numbers are, aside from touchdowns, are better than Fitz's this year. Right now, Floyd is now only one reception behind. Fitz leads the team with 55, and Floyd's got 54. But Floyd's got 860 receiving yards to Fitz's 678. And but the touchdowns, Fitz is 9 and Floyd is 4. It's almost, ooh. And there's obviously some questions you have to look at the offseason. Is Carson Palmer going to be? I think so. I mean, I would imagine so, unless unless a quarterback they can grab in the first round. I see Palmer being back next year. I hope Fitzgerald is back up. They have to do something with the contract. But getting kind of having the offense set and running where it's supposed to be from day one, really exciting to see how that would look in a season from now.
Yeah, and you look at the previous Arians offenses with, the Steelers. It was escaping me there for a second. I try to forget them as much as possible. you know, with the Steelers, and when, you know, they don't waste, and you never want to say waste, but they don't draft wide receivers high, you know, and that's kind of, I think that's going to be Arians and Time's philosophy going forward from here. And I could be wrong, but I think the value of the wide receiver in Arians' offense is much lower than the value of a wide receiver in what Wisenhunt was doing, you know, by drafting, you know, well, you know, inheriting Fitz and then drafting Floyd. And I think he understands that you can't have that much, you know, revenue kind of tied up into one position. So, you know, I've kind of maintained for the season that I think this might be Fitz's last year. Just for those reasons, not because, you know, he's declining or anything like that. It's just more that it's just the reality of the NFL now. You can't have, I saw the pie chart the other day. Somebody tweeted it out. I think it was like 28% of the Cardinals' salary cap is tied up in the wide receiver position. And that's, that's really bad when, their impact on the game is so low because they have to rely on so many other positions. They have to rely on the offensive line to protect the quarterback, and they have to rely on the quarterback to get them the ball. And so it's just, I think we'll see a round three, round four type receiver. Maybe they are able to finagle one more year of Fitz and Floyd and then make some decisions. But, it's getting to the point where, it might be time just based on salary implications.
Well, the big question is if Fitz is going to be essentially what he's become, is your red zone target, is that something you can you pay a guy $15+ million to be your red zone target while the other guy on the field is the guy that is the more dynamic player between the 20s, and then you toss it up to the wily veteran, and they look in Pittsburgh this year, who's their red zone guy? Jericho Cotchery. Jericho Cotchery. You can it almost seems like you could pick up one of those guys anywhere. And I don't want to diminish all that Fitz is and what he could be. I know this year has been tough for him in sense of learning new positions and dealing with the hamstrings, and finally it looks like he's getting over that. But that's a big question probably for the offseason. Hopefully it gets addressed. That's not a decision I want to have to make by any means. Getting back to the game, and again, you're talking, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. If you're listening live, you give us a call at 646-478-3787 to join us in our conversation. If you're listening to us live, join in. If you're listening to it via download, again, we thank you and hope you visit the site, revengeofthebirds.com, and join the conversation over there. Was there anything for you positive coming out of that game? You say, all right, things kind of got better in some ways. What were the positive things that stood out to you?
Well, obviously, I thought the run game was a positive. They did a great job opening up lanes. Mendenhall kind of did what I had talked about, he is as a runner, and that's he's a guy that he needs, 20+ carries to be effective. I know he had a nice game 2 weeks ago, I think it was, against Jesus, it's escaping me. Against the Colts. But, just in reality, he's a bulk carry kind of guy. He's a guy that's going to get you right around 4 yards per carry. So he's going to have to get 20+ carries to have, those bulk stats that make it look like he did anything, worthwhile. And that's kind of where he was on pace to, again, this game. I think he was averaging 4.2 yards per carry again. And, it was just a really I think it was a very grinded out type of game that he could have had and that he should have had. And unfortunately, again, because of play calling changes and then, of course, the fact that they got down so much, they kind of had to get away from the run game. But I thought the run game was good. I thought, obviously, again, the run defense is outstanding, which is, great, except for if you have Zach Stacy in the first round of the playoffs coming into your fantasy week this week. So, the run defense is just so good, and it's fun to watch. And, it's watching Washington and Dansby and watching Campbell and Dockett, and Te'amu was just destructive this week. I think you can really take away from both sides of the ball that they did a good job on the line of scrimmage. Really, you don't want to say dominating because, you'd like to say if you dominated, you won the game, but just playing really well.
Well, and I was real impressed, especially early in the game, that Rashard Mendenhall was, and it seemed that they were really committed to the run early and the change, and they were bringing in Bobby Massey as a jumbo tight end. I've really liked how they've been utilizing him lately. I was real impressed. I mean, you look at the stat line, Rashard Mendenhall, you know, lined up toe-to-toe. And obviously, he didn't ever face LeSean McCoy, but when you look at the performance, yard for yard, carry for carry, he was every bit the running back that LeSean McCoy was. You look at Mendenhall had 18 carries for 76 yards. McCoy was 19 for 79. Mendenhall had a 14-yard run. It's as long. McCoy had a 19-yard run. There wasn't a single negative play on the side of the Cardinals, while there were some negative plays for the Eagles. And so, yeah, I enjoyed seeing Rashard Mendenhall doing that. It's, and in part because I don't second guess the coaches. I don't like to second guess the coaches personally nearly as much when it comes to personnel, since they're the ones that see them on a daily basis and know what they can do and make a general rule, have a general idea that, well, coaches aren't going to purposely put a worse player in because they want to win. They want to put their players in the best situation. And to see the general public just kill Arians and for going with Mendenhall, and to see him perform quite well the past 2 weeks is really nice to see, to kind of prove, hey, if these football people do kind of know what they're doing. On the other side, I was impressed with the Cardinals' resolve, as, you know, on the road, it would have been very, very easy to pack up, especially when they got, I mean, they were down 24-7 after in the second half. I mean, that's almost to the point where you're like, oh, we're, so many teams will pack it in, and they didn't, and they were in a position where they could have, they gave themselves opportunities to take the game late in the game. Now, some of those opportunities were taken from them because of some questionable calls, but they got themselves, I was really pleased with that. They put themselves in a position despite the adversity early. We've seen them bounce back, and it's just, this was a bigger hole that they had to come back from, and in the end it just proved to be too much. But I love the resolve that they played. Palmer, again, his demeanor is perfect for what you want with your team. He doesn't get crazy when things go well. He has a short memory when things don't go well, and he just keeps at his business. And even if he makes stupid throws, he underthrows, but that sort of resolve, he doesn't let his emotions take over. While you say, one of the perfect cases is we see Kevin Cobb last year in that St. Louis game. You could see the visible frustration. Like he had it, and he kind of came unglued a bit to the point in that St. Louis game when he got sacked 9 times, understandably so. But Palmer keeps, okay, all right, that screwed up, then we take it back and go again, rather than letting that frustration take over.
Yeah, and I think to Palmer's credit is he truly believes in himself and his ability and what he's doing, even if he's not effective all the time. And that's just the reality of it. And you know, he's put up a nice bulk stat kind of year, but he's also been. I think you never want to place the blame on any one individual or entity, you know, referees or anything like that. But, you know, he's had his share of struggles and misses in this season that, you know, I think have hurt this team to the point where if they had, you know, an upgrade at quarterback, that maybe they're sitting at 8-4 or even 9-3 versus the 7-5. But of course, you could put the same way, you know, as Sean and I did. If they had somebody that could cover the tight end, they are 9-3 right now. You know, they don't lose that game to St. Louis, and they don't lose that game to Philadelphia. You know, you can put a toss up in the San Francisco game and what Vernon Davis did, but you know, it's clearly not that hard to cover Jared Cook in the NFL if you've seen what he's done the rest of the season. So it's just, you know, there's been, you know, he's done well, but he's done about exactly how I expected it to be. He's, you know, he's very much the, you know, definition of average NFL quarterback at this point. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's definitely an improvement over what they had last year. So,
I apologize for the technical difficulties. My internet connection, I don't know what happened, it dropped. Let me see if I can get Seth back on the line. But there was, what was I even saying? I was talking about Carson Palmer. With Carson Palmer, you have a guy who knows what he's doing, and he's, his physical abilities fail him from time to time. And what you're left with is a guy who ends up making some plays and a guy that messes up, but he's comfortable enough in his own skin to know that in the business, guess what? He'll take it on his shoulder. If he makes a bad decision, he's not gonna live or die by it. He just know, well, I messed up. What do I got to do to fix that? And let me see if I can get Seth back on the line. As let me see back. But again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is your host, Jess Rudigan. If you've got something you'd like to say, call in it at 646-478-3787. Other than that, if I can get Seth back on the line, we'll talk a little bit about the playoff chances. Other than that, you might just hear me ramble about the Cardinals' playoff chances. So bear with me as we try and get Seth back on. All right. Send him a text. Well, anyhow, we're talking about the things that are positive. The other thing that... Oh, he's back on. Hey, Seth, welcome back.
Sorry about that. Apparently my whole computer crashed, so...
it was my internet connection.
Oh,
my
internet connection. Okay.
I was in the middle of talking about Carson Palmer, and all of a sudden I heard, like, weird loopy sounds, and I was like, oh, no, I'm not connected to the internet.
All right. And it wasn't my good. All right, yeah.
So... I guess that was the internet telling me that we've talked enough about Carson Palmer. Was there anything else that you saw on the bright side, on the positive side for the Cardinals?
I think just the resolve, as you said. I mean, they're just a group that, you know, they believe in themselves, and for whatever reason they came out flat. I mean, you know, you don't want to put it on the coaching staff, but, you know, that kind of is their job, you know, to get them prepared and get them out on a fast note. And I think this is the third early East Coast game that they, well, fourth if you consider the start to the Jacksonville game, where they've come out really flat. And, you know, that's obviously a concern, because if they do make the playoffs, they're going to, you know, be going east, and they're going to be, you know, playing probably the early game, because it'll be the game on Saturday that nobody wants to watch. So,
and that's something that's absolutely understandable. I mean, it shouldn't be an excuse, but when you're talking about players of habit, when you have to move back a 2-hour, 3-hour difference, and your game time starts a lot earlier, you can see why they come out flat. And that's not a real excuse, but it is still something that's a valid concern. That's been something we've talked about for a decade, where you've got these West Coast teams going east. They traditionally do very poorly. And the stats are a little bit skewed, because during that time you've had an AFC West and an NFC West that for most of the time has not been very good. And so bad teams don't travel well. I mean, they're going to play better than at home they do it on the road. But even still, you still see that effect. You see the effect when West Coast teams travel east. It affects them in negative ways.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love how they didn't give up. I mean, even last year we saw the Cardinals plenty of times, oh, crap, it's 24-7 right after, you know, they march down the field and score a go-ahead, you know, give themselves a, you know, 3-score lead. And, well, you know, it was a good try. We tried hard. And this team is just the opposite. You know, they say, no, we got this. You know, we're going to come back and we're going to win this game. And they damn near pulled it off. So, you know, that's what's most important.
Now, if we look at after the loss, now the Cardinals fall to eighth in the conference. I mean, record-wise, they're tied with the Eagles, both at 7-5. However, having lost to the Eagles, they now lose that tiebreak with them should they fall behind. Let's talk about the playoff chances now. At 7-5, viably they still could end up 11-5. And that you think that's definitely a playoff team. The truth is, what do you think the Cardinals' playoff chances are at this point? I mean, if you look at the teams ahead of them, you've got San Francisco, you've got Carolina, now you've got Philadelphia ahead of them. How do you see their playoff chances still? And if I know they have to believe they're still in it, but I wrote an article the other day. They definitely are no longer in control of their destiny. They could win out, and they still need help. They still need help to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the most frustrating thing. But you and I kind of talked about it last week. They could have sustained some losses. You had to figure that they're going to lose to Seattle. And that's not a slight to the Cardinals. You look at what Seattle did last night to a really good New Orleans team, and Seattle at home is just a different animal than most teams anywhere. And so you had to figure that was a loss, and then you figured, just with the difficulty of the schedule the rest of the way, there was probably going to be another loss in there. 10-6 was something you and I talked about, at length, that was probably where they're going to end up, and, at that point, you're going to need some help, and it's kind of at that point where, yeah, it sucks that you don't control your own destiny, but in reality, and you never say never, but they were never going to control their own destiny with Seattle in Seattle on the schedule. And so now it just comes down to, just win the games you need to win. I said, I could see them losing this game, and then I kind of fully bought in and believed that they were going to win this game, and you see what that gets me. So I think this team is in the playoff hunt still. I think that they're a good enough team to make the playoffs. I think at this point it just comes down to they need to figure out a way to beat Tennessee in Tennessee at this point and go from there. The other games are pretty much, I think, you should expect you should expect to beat the Rams at home. Again, any given Sunday anything can happen, and then you need to win that game in Tennessee at this point. And then you don't want to say look past the Seattle game, but then really focus on taking care of business at home and giving yourself that chance to, hey, if we win this game, we've kind of controlled our own destiny in that way, and we can get into the playoffs if we beat San Francisco.
And yeah, the sad thing is looking at playoff scenarios, is at 10-6, even if the Cardinals, if the Cardinals beat the 49ers, and they end up, the 49ers 10-6 and the Cardinals 10-6, that division record, they need San Francisco to lose games at this point, unless they win out. And if they win out, that would even themselves back up at 3-3 in the division. And if San Francisco ended up at the same time 11-5, say they won 3 out of the next 4 and are losing only the Cardinals, at 11-5, they'd still take the tiebreak because they'd have a better, because they'd be 4-2 in the division. San Francisco needs to lose. It's just, they won't have the tiebreak over in San Francisco unless the Cardinals beat Seattle. So they need to finish a game ahead of San Francisco in the standings. Because to beat San Francisco in the playoff, it's like to beat the tiebreak, they have to get to 3-3. They need San Francisco to end 3-3. They need Seattle to beat them. They need the Cardinals have to beat them. And then they need to win out their last 3 division games. That way they're tied there. Then it goes to the common games. And the Cardinals have the tiebreak there because as of right now, the Cardinals are 6-1 in against the AFC South and the NFC South, while the Niners are 3-3, I believe. is where that sits. And so the Cardinals, where they hold the tiebreak there is with their common games, those eight games that they play the same division. But, yeah, it's going to be the way I look at it, it's virtually impossible. But we really – even still, they get to 10 wins. That's the best season I've ever – they hit 10 wins in 2009. That's the best season we've ever seen as Arizona Cardinals fans, ever. If they got to 10-6 in 1 year and didn't make the playoffs, it sucks. That would be terrible. But honestly, that's a great year. It really is.
Well, and the issue becomes, and you and I kind of hit on this last week too, the issue becomes if they end up 10-6, there's going to be the worry of regression next year because of the one-year contracts, because of the big contracts that they have to figure stuff out with. So you want to squeeze every opportunity out of this year that you can. And if you get to 10-6, like you said, that's going to suck if you can't make the playoffs because you blew a game early in the season to a Rams team that you should have beaten or, things of that nature. So, it is kind of what it is, and you hate saying that about anything, but it's frustrating to think that this team at this point could go 3-1 in the next four games and still not make the playoffs, because in reality, if any of us said at the beginning of the year, hey, the Cardinals are going to go 10-6, everybody's like, well, are they are they a 5 seed? Are they a 6 seed? Where are they going to play in the wild card round?
They're 8.
Exactly. It's like Philly. I think I had Philly going 8-8 at the beginning of this year, and obviously that's not too much of an undersell if they end up 10-6. But that's just how weird this NFL season has been, and just how good the NFC is compared.
Well, and that's Carolina. Carolina, what they're doing is really kind of ruining it for the rest of the NFC, because they've played themselves into – they could potentially – they could still win that division. Basically, Cardinals fans, we need to root for the best playoff chances the Cardinals will have if now the Eagles win the division in the NFC East and that the Panthers do not. Because if they can get any – tiebreak scenario, if they can get anywhere where they can even up their record with Carolina, they have this tiebreak, but with Philadelphia, they don't. I don't think what's going to happen in the NFC is they're going to play each other, so they're not going to the tiebreak is not going to come into play because either one team's going to be ahead of the other because of record. But in terms of purpose of the Cardinals, we need it. What Carolina has done over the last 2 months has kind of blown everyone out of the waters when you have a team like that. You have a San Francisco team. Everyone looked at, they're Super Bowl contenders. They had a hiccup, and then they're getting healthy again. So they were expected to be there. The fact that Carolina is the 5 seed right now is unheard of, and it's kind of what's kind of messing everything else, because you're going to end up with a team that's going to have, is a wild card team and with 12 wins.
Yeah, and. That's what really sucks, and you end up with that thought that what could have been, and then you look back at this game, and a lot of fans are going to go, oh, see, the refs, they cost the Cardinals a playoff berth, and a lot of fans are going to go back and say, look at it and say, man, not being able to cover a tight end for all season is what cost this Cardinals team a playoff berth, And that's what it kind of really boils down to at this point is, you need a lot of help. Take care of your business and just let other people falter and just kind of hope at this point, 10-6.
They need a miracle in Seattle. They really need a miracle in Seattle somehow.
Yeah, you'd love to see that. You'd love to see them not beat Seattle because of the playoff thing, but just beat Seattle in Seattle because – it's basically impossible to do, and that would be, I think, the win, especially after the faltering this week. I think that would be the win that would cause everybody to go, okay, this team is for real, But more than that, you just want to beat Alf Race, and you know, you don't want the Seattle Seahawks to get the satisfaction of knocking you out of the playoffs.
Oh, that's very true. I mean, that's what's great about the last three. I mean, three of the last four games, we got division games. You got the Rams, and you got the Titans game, and then you get Seattle and San Francisco. That's a great way to end the season, but at the same time, and you're in the hunt, you don't want those teams that you hate to bump you out. That to get to that, that's that. All right, what are you looking forward to most this next week? What are you looking for? How much bounce back do you expect from the Cardinals this week? What do you expect to see come Sunday?
You know, again, this is a home game against a team that has played admittedly well despite losing their quarterback, but this is a team you should beat, especially at home. And, you know, you're trying to stay in the playoff race. You can't lose this game, basically, is what I'm trying to say without saying it. if you want to be considered legit, if you want to be considered a contender, you can't lose a home game to a 5-7 team, no matter if they are a division rival or whatever else. So, you know, I think the offense is going to have some trouble because of the Rams' pass rush. I'm hopeful that we will see a more compact passing game, shorter throws and whatnot. And you're going to hopefully see more Mendenhall and maybe Ellington back. The whole knee thing is really weird and, you know, kind of something you don't even want to think about, because obviously it's something bad, or, you know, it could be something bad whenever it's a knee. So, but we'll see what happens. So, but I think they win this game. I think the defense is just too much, and I think they get enough going offensively to do, you know, what they need to do to win this game.
And likewise, I'm expecting, I mean, I think this team will be, I mean, there's a completely different team at home, and the way they've been playing at home in particular, I think, you know, I was, up until last week, the way that St. Louis had played against Indianapolis and against Chicago, I was like, oh boy, this could be one of those really bad games. But then to see San Francisco put in their place, I'm less worried now than I was before. I expect to see Cardinals win. I'm still working on getting something lined up from Turf Show Times, our Rams blog, with another, that we can do another podcast preview later on this week. I don't know if I'll be able to line that up, but I will definitely get that posted. Seth, just as a closing thought, as the Cardinals' playoff chances seem to be fading, and we'll just leave it with this. SB Nation's most recent mock draft has the Cardinals drafting, drumroll please, Johnny Manziel.
and I don't know if you saw on Twitter, the Cardinals VP and whoever number two is, I can't remember his name right now, allegedly, I know for sure they were at the LSU A&M game. I got confirmation on that. But I was told that they were also going to the Texas A&M Missouri game. So there's either one of two things. They wanted to see Mettenberger 1 week, and they were looking at the pass rushers from Missouri last week, along with watching both outstanding tackles from Texas A&M. Or they spent 2 weeks really digging into Johnny Manziel against two very good defenses and seeing if a guy that is worth looking at. And it's funny that you actually bring that up, because I'm finishing up an article on that right now. So, you know, it's an interesting thing, and you kind of read my mind there, and we'll see what happens. It's intriguing, that's for sure. I've got a couple calls into a couple different people to see, kind of gauge what the interest level is from not just the Cardinals, but the NFL in general on Manziel. And Some responses I've got are pricklet so far, so, but I think if he comes out, I think he'll end up in the first round. And, it, you know, two games for the top brass to go to in 2 weeks is, you know, it speaks volumes in what they're trying to figure out with prospects. So, you know, could it have been Manziel? Absolutely. And, you know, that'll at least get the Cardinals some attention.
That'll give them some buzz. Well, thanks for coming on tonight, Seth, as always. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. We will be back, if not later this week, we will be back on next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Arizona time. Signing off, this is Jess Ruth. That's Seth Cox. Have a great night, and go Cardinals.
Have a good one.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take Jen. She can see all the films she wants, whenever she wants, at Cineworld. From Finding Dory and the BFG to Suicide Squad. She gets 10% off all her cinema snacks, Baskin Robbins, sweets and treats, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of her favorite restaurants, like Frankie and Benny's. That's Jen's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited. From just $17.40 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at your local Cineworld or visit cineworld.com.